So this time on Distinct Nostalgia, we're taking you back to the 1980s and a classic Liverpool-based sitcom from the brilliant Carla Lane. This show pulled in 21 million viewers at its peak and was one of the most watched shows of the week on BBC One. Yes, this time Ashley's been chatting to Graham Bickley, who played the second incarnation of Joey Boswell in Bread. Enjoy.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Well, Graham, it's great to talk to you. Now, Bread, in its heyday, was huge at one time, wasn't it? It was one of the biggest sitcoms of its day.
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, I think the figures were in the region of 16 to 19 million per week, which is just incredible now. You can't even think of numbers like that now. And for the Christmas specials, it got into the 20, 21, 22. No pressure on those of us who were taken over while it was that popular. But yeah, it was of its time. It was in another era now. You know, it was the three-channel wonder. And God, it was very happy days then. It seems a lot more complicated now.
So, and it used to go out on a Sunday night, didn't it, if I remember rightly? Wasn't it always a Sunday night, Brett?
It was a Sunday night, and when they repeated it straight away, it went out on a Monday.
That's right. Yeah. Brilliant. So just remind people, I mean, I know you came to it a little bit later on, and we'll talk about that, but just remind people, what was the original concept of Carla Lane's sort of idea with this? Because Carla Lane had been around a long time, she'd done lots of other things. But what was the main premise of Bread?
Well, of course, I wasn't there at the beginning, so of course, I can only sort of recall what I picked up when I joined the programme. But Carla I don't think Carla had a sort of premise. It was just an idea that she wanted to do. I think a lot of the characters, a few of the characters, certainly the Jerry character, was based on family members. And I think the idea just grew from there. I don't think she had a message to put over with Bread. I don't think she said, if I do this sitcom called Bread, it'll be about this, this and this, and I'll try and put this message across. I think she just wanted to write something that was funny, and she looked for funny situations with an edge. She used to hate the title situation comedy. She used to prefer situation tragedy. More than that, I was 3 years down the line, so it was very well sort of in its rut by then, its smooth rut of being the successful show that it turned out to be.
But it was, of course, you know, she's from Liverpool, you're from Liverpool. It was very much based on that family sort of getting together in Liverpool. You know, there is something about, it's the same in London. You know, they're talking about family and EastEnders and all that kind of stuff. I grew up in Yorkshire. There's definitely community spirits and things. But there is something quite unique about the Liverpool community spirit, isn't there, and families and things. You know, maybe do you think she really did draw on her own upbringing, kind of thing?
Oh, I think most certainly. And of course, being a Scouser herself, she knew the humour that is in the people of Liverpool. She knew from being one herself, and I think she drew on that not only in Bread. Of course, she did other situation comedy stroke tragedies that based in Liverpool. It was a place she loved very much, full of people that she loved very much. And we have such a unique sense of humour up, if you like, always have done, continue to this day, I'm sure. I haven't lived in Liverpool for a while now, but it's always present when I do go back. And I think she just wanted to write about something she knew very much, in great detail.
But of course, your roots were actually in Wales, weren't they, as well? Because you had Welsh and ancestry. Is that right? You were a Welsh boy living in Liverpool. Is that right?
I remember well. Grandmother had Welsh roots. Yeah. So my parents were very much Liverpool Scousers, and I didn't count myself as Welsh particularly.
Yeah, yeah. So when you ended up in Bread, did you have a Liverpool accent at that point? Did you?
I always have the accent. Really, I hadn't lived there for quite a while, but it doesn't take long to swing back into it. It's usually mixing with other Scousers, or if I'm very tired, or dare I say it, alcohol, and the accent tends to creep out. My mother now, I think my mother now has a thick accent, although she doesn't think she has an accent at all. But it was sort of bashed out of us, not for any lack of pride in the city. I just think it was not where my parents were. So we were a middle-class family from Wavertree. We never had a strong accent in the family, really. But it snuck in, and, you know, I can call on it at any time.
So talk about how you got the role then, because, of course, Bread had been going for a while. It was big by the time you were in it, so you knew about it, presumably, and had watched it and whatever. I don't know. Well, had you watched it? You know, tell us a bit about how you got the role.
Well, I hadn't watched it, would you believe? And I don't know why that was now. It just wasn't on my radar. I was doing shows Monday to Saturday, so in theory, the Sunday night was available to me as a television programme to watch. But because that was our one and only night off from theatre, you tended to go off and go out and do things. And even though we could record stuff on the old video machines then, it wasn't in my sight line particularly. My good mate, who still is my good mate to this day, called me one day and he said, I've got an audition for this TV. Would you read something in the newspaper, anything, and record it on your Sony Walkman? And do it in Scouse, because I need to get a Scouse accent going, which I duly did. I didn't ask him what it was for. I just did it. And I saw him a couple of weeks later, and he said, oh, I didn't get it. No, I didn't get it. And I said, what was it for? He said, it was a thing called Bread, a character called Joey Boswell in Bread. And I said, oh, right, yeah, okay, vaguely, yeah, it rings a bell. And I can't remember how long it took, but a penny dropped at some point, and I got in touch with my agent and said, look, I know this is a very long shot, but should we give it a go? And we did. And I think, unbeknownst to me, they'd been looking for quite a while by then. And I think from my first audition, first time I met Carla and Robin Nash, the producer-director, to the first day of filming was about 10 days. It was ridiculously short time. They were running out of time. And, you know, in theatre, one is used to auditioning for something and waiting weeks or months before you hear anything at all. So to have this turned round in 7 to 10 days, I think, was alarming now, but, you know, we just threw ourselves into it and off we went.
Not only alarming, in a way, but also it wasn't like it was a new character. Here you were replacing an established character. That must have been quite daunting for you, wasn't it? It was quite a difficult thing to do.
Well, it wasn't. I think a huge dose of naivety and being terribly green about these things. Plus, in theatre, people take over an awful lot in theatre. In the long-running shows, I'd done 2.5 years in Les Mis just by then, and I was in a show called Metropolis at the time of auditioning. So taking over was just what we did. And to be absolutely honest, if you get the unique offer of joining a sitcom, you're not going to go, oh, no, hang on, is this really what I... You know, it's a big shoes to fill. You jump in, and you think I'll... You know, especially at the age, you know, I was much younger, I was whatever I was, 29, 30. You just jump in, and you think, well, they asked me to, so we'll just go for it.
Did you spend much time looking at the previous actor, or did you just go for it in terms of the way you wanted to play it?
I never saw an episode of Bread until I saw my first one. I just thought it was better by then. I mean, I could have asked the BBC to send me a load of videos, but I didn't. I actually, first of all, there wasn't an awful lot of time to do that in, because in that 7 to 10 days between the first meeting, I had shows to do. I was still doing 8 shows a week in the theatre. I had to spend one of those days being blonded, having never been blonded before in my life. That was an awful long day. So I just decided we'll just go with it and just jump in. Just jump in, give it a go and see what happens, really.
And do you remember your first day on set with all the actors? I mean, did you know any of them? Had you come across any of them before?
No, none at all. No, I do. I used to get the train. I used to do the show, get the train up, get off the train at 6 a.m. in Liverpool and go straight to makeup in what was the Holiday Inn. And I think my first scene was with Brian in a park. I'd never met anybody, never seen the crew. I'd met Robin, the director, who was utterly charming, and he was the rock I held on to. But they were just all so supportive, and I'm sure they must have been thinking, oh, how's this going to go? whoever it is, how is this going to go? Because Peter had created this huge character, this huge personality. From what I glean, he dropped out sort of at the 11th hour. It wasn't; they didn't have too long to think about it. I'm trying to remember more detail, but it is an awful long time ago. But all I remember is huge support, not only from the crew and all the tech team, but the family as well. And, of course, Jean, who really did step into, you know, being mother, my work mother, and made sure that I was, and Melanie, of course, because we were both new at the time, we both joined at the same time, we were both looked after, very much so.
Fabulous. Now, the thing I always remember about it is everyone being around the table, basically. That was that's the main thing, wasn't it? That was the big thing, really. Tell us a bit about some of that. You know, how were those scenes easy to do? Or were they things that took a while? I mean, how were they sort of choreographed?
Again, by then, everybody else knew the table scenes very well. Obviously, they were different every week, but the choreography was pretty much the same. And I slipped into the empty seat. We would rehearse during the week. I think we rehearsed Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and shot it on the Sunday. And there was one every week, and we always just looked forward to it because it was always the meatiest of scenes when you saw most of the family. And, of course, we then waited for the big speech from Jean because she always got the long, rambling rant at the end of it. And how she used to learn those, I will never know. I just remember great fun in the studio. You just had to not be the first one to dry that night. There was a big stigma about being the first to dry in your lines. All in good humour, of course, but as long as it wasn't you, then the evening went well.
And it was all done in front of a studio audience, wasn't it?
All done in front of a studio audience.
And a Liverpool audience. Centre. A Liverpool audience at the end of the day.
Well, sometimes we used to invite anybody in the street, in Elswick Street, that wanted to come down. There was always the coach load that came down as a sort of a thank you for us filming in their street for 3 or 4 weeks a year. And so we used to sort of, you know, give them a night out for those who wanted to come down. But mainly, I think it was, a southern audience that just wanted tickets for a show because it was done in TV Centre.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I grew up in Doncaster and grew up seeing Open All Hours being filmed in Bowlby in Doncaster. And then you forget that actually, the main inside scenes are done in TV Centre in London. It's all very bizarre. I've always found that really odd because the BBC had centres in Manchester and Leeds, and you think they might have used them a bit, you know what I mean? But
think at the time, the politics, I think it was probably a very complicated thing, and I think BBC Television Centre in London had the dibs on the big shows and the budgets to do the big shows, I think. So it was always down there. And when we did the filming, we'd spend 2-3 weeks doing the filming, a couple of months beforehand, and we wouldn't see the results of the filming until the day of the studio recording, which is always the thrill to see how it all come out because we didn't really have a clue and it was all edited together by then. Just great fun, great fun.
What's bizarre about that, of course, is on the other side, on the ITV side, what was happening was that people like Christopher Strawley and James Bolam and whatever who were doing things like Only When I Laugh were rehearsing in London and coming up to Leeds to record it on a Thursday and Friday night in Leeds at Kirkstall Road, you know. So it was the opposite way with ITV, you know.
Sort of God, weird. Yeah. I've never done it any other way, of course. So this was just the norm for me. Yeah. And I was glad of it because at least on the Sunday, which was my theatre day off, I didn't have to go out of town. It was a long day, obviously. I think we had to be there by 9 in the morning. And so I'm glad it was London, not somewhere else, after two shows on the Saturday night.
Let's talk a little bit about the stories and things. Carla being Carla, as you said, you know, she's very much into, she's used to call it situation tragedy rather than situation comedy. And there was always a lot of pathos in it, wasn't there? There was always a lot of seriousness in there. So, you know, she never stopped short of dealing with serious issues and things like that. No. When you look back at it, what storylines in that vein, you know, do you remember and do you appreciate and really enjoy doing?
Oh gosh, now you've got the memory banks wearing away now. We used to, I'm just thinking about this. We used to be quite surprised how at what Carla got away with, because in those days, in the late 80s, her language that she used in a half-hour comedy was really pushing the boundaries by then. And she did have a couple of occasions when things had to be dropped out and she had to replace them, and she was livid. Because once she had written a script, she didn't want to change a word. Even during the rehearsals, we all tried it. We all said, "Oh, Carla, would it be possible if I could just say this?" No, I'm sorry, Graham. That's the way it's written. And so everything was printed by the time we got it, and very little could change, unless somebody pointed out a story fact that was, you know, the dog had actually died by then, so we couldn't mention him. But the writing itself could not be changed unless you were the BBC bigwigs. And I think on a couple of occasions it was suggested that it was changed. But the storylines were also pushing it, and there was an awful lot of criticism and about this family that was scrounging on the dole and not working. And I think sometimes it used to amuse her how people would get fictitious writing mixed up with real life. It was written for a bit of fun. And nobody was saying, this is your average Liverpool family. This is what they do up there. But, of course, the tabloids would see it another way because it was good copy to have a bit of a banter going between the public that liked it and those who didn't. But the Liverpool public, which were the only public that Carla was interested in, they adored it. They loved it and were very proud of it. And I think they missed it when it finished. They missed it being around.
Yeah, because at the time, of course, Liverpool was focused on a bit, because you got Bread and you got Brookside, of course. There was two slightly different things. Brookside was quite hard-hitting. But in another way, mm-hmm. Bread was quite hard-hitting. And, you know, it's quite interesting in that sense, because you mentioned the different storyline. I mean, she didn't steer away from being quite controversial with stuff, did she? You know, she was happy to tackle issues of the day, basically. She didn't have a problem with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, she had no problem with that at all. And I think she would have gone a lot further had she been allowed to. And we were all a bit surprised she hadn't written a play for today or something that could go into the drama, strictly into the drama slot. But I don't think she was interested in that. She just wanted to write what was in her heart and her head. And this was it at the time. And obviously the Butterflies and the others were the important ones then. I can't remember if it was my second or third season. And word got round that America wanted to take it. And of course, you know, we all went, oh my goodness me, that is kerching. You know, not for us, but for Carla, the writer. We wouldn't go. It was just they wanted the storyline, as it were, the family thing. And she went over there a couple of times. And they wanted to change Grandad into Grandma. And they wanted to change a couple of the characters. And she just said, no. Stop. Stop, stop, stop. And just said, no, not, you're not doing it. And walked away. Because she had a belief in it, I think. And it really didn't bother her. I'm sure she probably lost an awful lot of money by not allowing them to do what they wanted to do with it. But she had great pride in it. And I think she felt as though she owed it to the people of Liverpool, not just to offload it onto somewhere else and make a packet on it. And although, because of that time, she was, you know, her animal sanctuaries were all over the place. She could have done with the funds, but she had too much pride, I think, to just allow it to go.
I'm not sure it would have worked really in America. It was very much a Liverpool thing, wasn't it? Really, in a way, you know what I mean?
Yes, it would have gone. It would have. I don't think it would have gone well without major sort of work on it, and then it wouldn't have been Carla's work. So
exactly,
she said nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's talk about your character then. So,
yeah,
how did you get into him and sort of develop him? And were you able to? I mean, obviously Carla was very strict on certain things, but were you able to have any influence on him a bit, do you think?
Joey was established, obviously, by the time I joined. So there were certain characteristics that were always going to remain. His wardrobe, for one. And the first six scripts were actually written for Peter. because Carlo had already finished them before he had said he didn't want to take up the next series. So I very much had Peter's words to say. And Carla used to shape a character looking at the characteristics that an actor would bring to the table. And so slowly, slowly, Peter's character disappeared and she started to write for my version of it. And I could see certain things that were happening. And even to the extent that there were certain phrases she'd overheard me say across the coffee table, which suddenly went into the script. And so you sort of had to be careful, you know, who was listening. If you didn't want things to appear in the script, you know, but you just would just pick up on things. So it did become my sort of Joey, but just because she was just so observant and wanted to make it. She wanted to mould it. She thought it worked better if there was much more of the actor in it. She didn't want to just throw a bunch of words at you and just say, these are what you're going to say, without them meaning something to you. So it was, I didn't have to do that work. It was done for me, which was fabulous, of course.
And Ashley's chat with Graham Bickley from Bread will continue in just a few minutes.
In the meantime, listen out for news about a special documentary coming soon about an iconic daytime show.
It burst onto our screens 50 years ago this year. And for a generation of kids, it became must viewing when you were sent home from school in the afternoons.
It was played like a court, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And you didn't know what the outcome was going to be because, you know, so they were ready to film two different endings, whatever the jury decision was. Yeah. Which was almost a bit like live television. It was great. It was edgy.
We're talking, of course, about the groundbreaking Crown Court. Filmed at Granada Television in Manchester, the show was unique and saw some big names cut their teeth over its long run on ITV.
It was an afternoon programme, and although it was an afternoon programme, they had some very fine actors in it because there were good chances to show your mettle if you're an actor, because there were long tranches of dialogue between judges and advocates and indeed actors.
It also had an iconic theme tune that became the B-side to the A-side of Van der Valk, which went on to top the charts. We'll also be talking to the man behind that theme.
Various bits of music were played, and I think I was sitting in on the session helping choose the music, and he said, we've just done that album with you, with that piece Distant Hills. That might be right. I thought, well, I don't know, it doesn't sound right to me. But anyway, we dug it out and played it to them, and they said, yeah, that's it. Thank you very much.
That's all to come when we're back in the Crown Court, coming soon only on Distinct Nostalgia. And if you'd like to share your memories of the show, please email us at info@madeinmanchester.tv or message us on our Twitter page at Distinct by MIM.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM. And if you like what we do, then please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every penny helps us to make even more amazing content just for you. Go to distinctnostalgia.com and click on the donate button. Thank you.
Now, of course, you were taking over somebody who'd been played it for a long time, and yep. You were developing it into your role, and this was a big show. What feedback did you get? What was the feedback, good initially or bad, or what did you get any feedback?
I'm sure, I got loads of feedback. I'm sure the feedback was heavily edited by the Bread office, because all I can say is thank goodness there was no social media, because you know what would happen. People would have been on it like a shot, and I think the worst of it was probably kept from me. But all I was concerned about was that they were happy and that the figures remained where they were from the previous season, which they did. They went up, obviously, because everybody wanted to see the new Joey and Eveline. And then they went down a bit as various people thought, I miss Peter too much. And then they came back up again and they levelled off. And that's when, by the end of the first season, I do remember relaxing, thinking, OK, well, if we do another season, then I'm okay. We've proven that it's worked. There were going to be many, many, many people that I was never going to win over. There was one letter I did receive about one of the first couple of episodes, and it was about Joey and his tax problems, and he was in a bit of a tax issue. And this was a script that was for Peter. It was already written for Peter, nothing to do with me at all. But I got letters saying, you know, oh, that's ridiculous. Now, you know, the other Joey, he never would have had problems with the tax. It's absolutely ridiculous that you do. And he would never wear a dressing gown like that one, because I came down the stairs in some dressing gown with JB on it or something. And I thought, wardrobe, that's out of my hands. I don't have any say in what I wear. And I don't even at that point, I had very little say in the script because I'd only just joined. But, you know, you've got to just smile. And thank God I was thick-skinned enough to let it go. But I'm sure there was many, many people that I didn't win over, because that's the way it goes.
Of course. I mean, it's quite a risk for the producers in a way, wasn't it, in terms of getting a new... Because you weren't just a bit part. You were one of the main parts, really.
And, yeah.
You know, I suppose it's a credit to the fact that, A, to the team and everybody together, but the fact that they'd got such a great... Already got just such a great ensemble cast anyway.
And they were all stars. They were all big, big characters. And it wasn't in any shape or form, you know, just reliant on Joey and Aveline. They were a big part of it, of course. But fortunately, it was a big ensemble company, as you alluded to. And I think that was why the BBC thought, well, we've got to give it a go. We've got to see whether we can save this. Obviously, I'm sure they thought about dropping it. But I think they knew that it still had a big head of steam and it had somewhere to go. And Carla, I would imagine, thought, I have somewhere to go with this. I need to take it somewhere else. It's not the time. So we were very fortunate that it landed in our laps, really. It was crazy. I mean, it was 6 o'clock news item. It was absolutely front page of tabloids, you know, as we were revealed. And I'd spent days before in the theatre getting phone calls from journalists saying, are you the new Joey? And I was sworn to secrecy. I said, guys, you're the fourth guy that's phoned me up today. I am from Liverpool. And I wish it was me. But no, I'm here in the theatre. How can I be doing a TV? Oh, he said, all right. Oh, sorry to have bothered you. And, you know, I just had to bat them away. And of course, they all then faced me when we did do the big public thing at the BBC. They were all there going, I spoke to you the other day. You did. And I said, well, I'm sorry. That's what I was told to do. You know,
I was going to say, you know, here you were, you know, starring in a show that was huge, massive, you know, you starred in 35 episodes and there were 70 odd. So you starred in a lot of them. Your life must have changed. Straight away overnight, didn't it?
I don't remember it changing. I mean, there were obviously differences, obviously. But I remember the guys, the journalists were saying at the press conference, sort of just what you said, oh, it's all going to change now and all. And I said, you know what? I said, I don't think it is. I said, if I need to go on the tube, I'm going to go on the tube. If I need to do this, I'm going to do that. It's an attitude. I mean, I very quickly learned that you don't go into pubs near the end of closing. That was probably not a good thing to do. Even if you just want a quiet drink, you don't do it, because there's going to be somebody who wants to make something of it. And so you just avoided it. But I don't think, I'm a northerner. I was 30 at the time. I had just done 2.5 years as a principal lead in Les Mis, which was the biggest show of its type at the time. So I had a taste of it. Obviously, it was on a different scale. I worked it out that... In the 2.5 years I'd been in Les Mis, the show had been watched by, you know, in big round figures, about 1 million people. And in the first half an hour of Bread, it was 21 million. I think the first episode was 21 million in 1.5 hours. So it was a very different beast. But my memory of it is mostly there were one or two little sticky bits, but mostly great fun, and it opens a lot of doors, and it was just great fun. I think it was. I just think I was old enough to deal with it. I can't imagine if I'd have been younger and a little wilder, but I wasn't a club goer. That's not what I did. I was a single lad, but I was in a stable relationship. There was. I remember saying the press thing. I said, "Okay, guys, I'm going to be really honest with you now. I'm going to tell you how it is. I have got a speeding ticket. So there you go. Now you know. You've got my whole, you know." And they all started saying, "Oh, we're going to get you. We're going to catch you out." You know, and they did eventually, courtesy of a ex-girlfriend. You know, the old Sunday favourites, the Sunday papers. But it wasn't me. It wasn't me that did it.
Obviously, as we said before, there was a great ensemble cast. Who did you, you know, I mean, I know it's a long time ago, but, you know, there must be some great memories of working with some of those people. Who in particular do you think, when you look back, do you have particular fond memories of working with now when you think back?
Oh, golly. Well, of course, you know, Gene was a big personality, which you couldn't avoid. And it was a lovely personality and a very generous personality. And she really did look after us because, of course, as well as doing the show, we then took it on the road and we did a tour of it. So combining my first love of theatre with the TV was fantastic. And so, of course, we then began to see a lot more of each other because we were on the road. Giles Watling, who played the vicar, he was the first of the team I ever saw. I remember walking into the hotel for makeup on the first morning. And he came over and he said, "Oh, welcome, welcome. Now, do you play poker?" And I said, "Giles, I don't play poker, mate. I'm so sorry." He said, "Oh, it's all right. Anyway, come in." And that was his opening gambit. And I still see Giles. I'm very, very fond of Giles. And we see each other as much as we can. He's, of course, now a Member of Parliament for Clacton. Very different theatre, that is. Vic McGuire, very fond memories. I used to see a lot out of hours. And Nick. A lot of them. Mel, we saw, you know, we used to go to shows together, two or three of us, four of us or whatever. It was a very happy time, very happy time. But to this day, I've spoken to Vic, I haven't seen him for a while, but Giles, I'm in touch with Giles. In fact, the last time I saw him, which was just before the pandemic, he took my wife and I round the Houses of Parliament for a lovely day. So that was very exciting and very different to a television studio. Maybe not that different, actually. I don't know. Maybe not that different. A few characters, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look back at it, I mean, it's been repeated recently, actually. I've been watching a few of the episodes. What do you think was the general secret of its success? I mean, it lasted 7 series, which is a lot, and nearly 80 episodes from sort of the mid-80s into the early 90s. What was it about it? Was it, you know, do you think it was of its time? Do you think that's what it was? It was portraying the sort of that period in a way and had sort of fitted into that sort of zeitgeist of that period? Or what was it about it, do you think?
Well, it was tough at the time, and I think things were very tough in Liverpool at the time, which probably accentuated why we got some of the criticism. We seemed to be, not Liverpool, but people outside Liverpool thought we were laughing at the people of Liverpool and saying, "Oh, look, you know, we can make a joke out of this," which is so not true. And we defended that quite rightly every single time it was levelled at us. I think part of its success was the clever knack Carla had of extending stories over episodes. It wasn't a story per half hour. And so you're naturally going to grab people and they're going to want to know. And this ongoing,
which was rare for sitcom, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Carla started all that and she, I think that's why she didn't want to call a situation comedy, because I think, you know, it wasn't like a Dad's Army. It wasn't like any other half hour sitcom that started and finished within 29 minutes. So I think it was never a soap, but it had qualities whereby you wanted to see what happened when Joey went to meet the girlfriend that he never seemed to be able to get it together with, and you knew that was going to happen next week as he raced off in his black Jag to go and meet her. And I think they became very, very fond of the relationships that were in the family. Sadly, the family's getting smaller. Our Boswell clan are getting smaller by the year, but we lost another 2 last year. But I think it was just, I just think people wanted to know more about these characters, and Carl had a lot to say about
it. And it was very much, we talked about, you know, the link with the fact that you couldn't really put it into America. It was very much about Liverpool, wasn't it? And, you know, because you got that, it was based in a particular area, and you'd also got, you know, she didn't shy away from the religious side, did she? You know, this is a Catholic family. No. That came out on several occasions, didn't it? You know, it's not often you get that in a sitcom either, is it really?
Well, but of course, it was beautifully balanced by Giles's vicar, of course. So, you know, you did have the two represented, if you like. And I don't know whether she did that on purpose, so it sort of staved off some of the arguments, as it were. But I always found it quite surprising that even though the series is shown on various cable channels now, it never made it back to BBC channels, the main BBC channels. And I wonder, I don't know whether it's just because it's too expensive, because it was quite a big ensemble. But it's interesting that it was so huge then. But unlike The Dad's Armies, unlike many sitcoms that have come back onto BBC One in the afternoon or something, Brett's never done that, which is, I find, quite surprising.
So what was the relationship like between the people of Liverpool and Brett then? You mentioned the fact that you'd go filming there for a few weeks of the year or whatever. You know, what was, you know, tell us a bit about that. Was it a good, close relationship? Did they love the series, do you think?
Well, whenever you met them, the people you met did. And the people in the street used to love it and used to play extras as well. So they had their bit of 50 minutes of fame, 50 minutes of being on the telly. Of course, you know, we wouldn't meet the people who didn't like it, because that's not the way it goes. The ones that come forward to say hello are only the ones that want to. But the local press, the Liverpool Echo, always used to defend Brett. They never sort of jumped on the bandwagon of the national tabloids who wanted to have a go at it. They sort of saw Brett as, it's ours. Get off. Get your hands off it. You know, stop knocking it. We're happy with it. We love it. And I had I've got a couple of mates of mine who only about a month ago went on a cruise around the UK, which visited Liverpool, and they were taken on a coach tour, and they went to a couple of the parks, and then they were taken on a bread tour and taken down the street. And of course, he telephoned me straight away. And I said, I never thought that bread would ever feature on a big international cruise line programme. It's all getting very strange. But obviously there was a fan there somewhere and they wanted to sort of flag it up. And apparently people said, yes, I remember Brett. It was a big hit. So.
Well, it's still there. We're finding with Distinct Nostalgia, people do love their nostalgia. You know, they absolutely adore it. You know, they like that connection back to those times. Now, obviously, it finished quite a long time ago now. Just imagining, you know, if we were to bump into those characters now, where would some of them be, do you think? Would that family still exist there, or what would have happened to them, do you think?
Well, I sincerely hope that the boys would have left home and got themselves a life away from their mother. It was high time. I hope Joey walked out of the house on the last episode, so I hope he stayed out and didn't come back. Where Freddie Boswell and Lilo Lil ended up, Who would know? Maybe they're in a shed together somewhere up there, because they're sadly no longer with us now. The actors are no longer with us. I don't know. I bet you there's still chaos with some of them. I bet you Billy's still causing a lot of trouble, still trying to find the woman of his dreams. And Adrian, who knows? Who knows where the poet got to?
And of course, sadly, we've lost Carla now. So we'll never find out. We'll never know. But it's probably. I bet if she was still around and somebody had asked her to revisit those characters, she probably would have done. You know.
Well, she was asked many a time, either to just write it in a column, or I think she was approached at one point to write a. It might have been a one-off or something, and I don't. I think she just went, do you know what? They're done. It's done.
Yeah.
And it was sort of. She wrote a sitcom called Brighton Bells after that Gene was in, that didn't go beyond a series. And so,
for some reason, Carla seemed to go out of favour, didn't she, at a certain point?
Well, it was at the end of Bread, so that was been 91, I think. There was the big, huge change at the BBC, and they started to bring in private companies. I remember it came as a great shock because for the most of the time I was doing Bread, we used to rehearse in North Acton at the rehearsal studios there, and there was normally just us and the Generation Game in the building. That was basically it, of the regulars. And then we came back to do the last series, and we all rocked up on the first day of rehearsals, and the car park was jam full, absolute jam full. What the heck's going on here? And it was the first time they had rented out their space to an independent production. And it changed from then on, really. I think all the Carla's allies moved on. I think the desires were wanting different things. And then as soon as the BBC said, we're going to buy in private work, of course, it narrowed Carla's window, if you like, you know, because they had so many more choices. One of our cast also said, I won't be doing any more. And I think Carla also went, well, do you know what? Then let's draw the line now. We're not going through another change.
Well, my partner interviewed Carla a couple of years before she died, went to her house and yeah. was full of animals and all the rest of it. And and he says, didn't you, that Carla, she was still keen on writing. She wanted to do more. You know, she was really keen on doing more. It's really quite sad in a way. When it came to an end, were you shocked or surprised, or did everyone feel it was naturally time to finish Bread?
Well, at the end of every series, we'd normally finish with a Christmas special, and that would be the last thing we did for that year, and you would never know whether there was going to be any other. They wouldn't tell you whether, so you'd have to sort of sit in your hands till the following spring, and then you get the phone call, yes, we're doing another 10 episodes, and off you go again. So when we got to the end of what became the final series, we hadn't been told officially, but by looking at the writing, she was tying up quite a lot of storylines, and there was the very final shot of the helicopter shot of the pulling away, and we all thought, oh, well, that's it. And I can't remember when we were officially told, but a word got round after we'd finished that would be it. So, you know, all good things. We all moved on and did our own stuff, sort of thing. But I wish it could have gone on much longer, of course. I loved every minute of it. But I'm used to jobs finishing.
Of course,
you know, that's what I've done.
No, absolutely. But what impact then did it, this final question really, what impact did it really have on your life and career? Did it change your life in any way, do you think? Or
I don't think so. I look back now and I think I could have exploited it more. I didn't. That was probably because I had a very good agent at the time who was very poorly, and I don't think he was right on it, which is just one of those things. I don't blame him at all. But, you know, if you look at somebody now that's in a sitcom or a comedy or something, and then you learn later, actually, they can also sing. You know, there's some sort of crossover. There's, you know, let's get him to do this number or whatever. And I never did that. I just went back to musical theatre, which is where I'd come from. And it would have been lovely to do some more TV, but you've got to take the jobs in front of you. And I mean, you know, I did a few years of Panto off the back of Bread, so because they like to... Graham Bickley from Bread, you know. So, but of course, every year that I wasn't on telly, your name's shrinking, sort of thing. So that came to an end, and it's just you get used to what the rules are. That's just the way it is, and somebody replaces you.
Of course. Now Bread was around at a time when there was a lot of sitcom. You know, Britain was, you know, both ITV and BBC was doing sitcoms all the time. We don't have as many sitcoms now. There's a bit of a dearth, isn't there? Certainly not a massive amount of observational comedy anymore, and not in the Carla Lane sort of sense, is there? You know what I mean? It's quite sad, that, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Lee Mack writes one, doesn't he? He does one, and I remember reading a report about it saying, oh, it was just lovely. It's an old-fashioned sitcom. I can't remember whether it was about that one particularly, but there must be another one. There must be one or two. But they're rare beasts now, and I don't know whether it's because the TV companies reckon it's not what people want, or they don't want to take a gamble on them, because the BBC gambled on Bread. The first series of Bread did nothing, but they're prepared to put in the well, let's give it another series and see
they
what
seem
happens,
to be obsessed, you know? The TV companies now seem to be obsessed with quiz shows again. Quiz shows are everywhere.
Yeah.
And true crime. It's sort of obsession with true crime all the time. It's like, you know.
And reality shows. They want to let's just do a show of them and put the celebs in and, you know, have the celebrity special. And
What do you think you actually ultimately that period, which is obviously a big period of your life, what do you ultimately do you think you got out of Bread?
A mortgage. I got a great amount of experience. I also learned that however much I love doing TV, and in, by comparison to working in a show, it's a doddle, or doing what I did was a doddle in terms of just energy. But it also reminded me that I loved what I did in theatre. Just to be away from it for 3 years, I was very happy to go back into the West End and go back there. So maybe that's what it taught me most of all. That's really where my heart lay.
Graham, that's fantastic. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us about Bread.
Absolutely my pleasure.
Graham Bickley, who played Joey in Bread. And don't forget, you can hear hundreds of hours of interviews and reunions with the stars of classic TV and film by scrolling through the Distinct Nostalgia feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.